We've had our final meeting, and then here we are again. So I'm not even going to say for our last meeting, because I doubt it probably will be, but I do appreciate you all being here. We are going to start, actually, this morning, sort of in reverse order while we're waiting for some amendments, apparently, that are being copied. So we're going to start with Senate Bill 914. I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 914. And I know Senator Deckert would like to speak to the bill, which will allow him to do it if he arrives in time. The only other person we have up is Dale Penn. So, Mr. Penn? Yeah, counsel, feel free to...
Rather than looking at the engrossed bill, you should be looking at the 87 amendments, because they supersede the bill now.
You didn't want to be the only guy up here speaking, did you, Dale?
No.
I did not
really
want this to be the Dale Penn bill.
Don't put your name on the witness list, then.
Well, Mr. Taylor forced me to.
Really? Yes, we needed a witness. So.
Yeah, it is a public hearing, so it would help to have a witness. Dale, this. Let me just see if I can summarize what I think is happening here, and then you fill us in on maybe some of the specifics. Colleagues, this bill relates to the... criminal forfeiture bill, which we passed out of this committee and which has been passed out of the Senate committee. I don't know if it's passed the floor of the Senate yet. Has it, Dale?
I believe it did in the last day or two, but
I'm not sure either. I know it moved out of committee. I just don't know if it's moved across the Senate floor. This bill does some allocation of the forfeiture assets is probably the best way to describe it in general terms. Why don't you fill us in on some of the details then, Dale?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dale Penn, representing the District Attorneys Association. Senator Deckert has a bill at 914, and this has passed the Senate, and is designed to focus some treatment resources for primarily first offender type drug possession cases. And with criminal forfeiture and civil forfeiture being modified, and a focus in both of those bills concerning drug treatment resources, 914 is now, with the A7 amendments, been amended to try to take into account the reality that through the forfeiture processes, there will be some money that will be available eventually for treatment. And so 914 establishes some standards for the types of cases that could be involved, and as I said, it will tend to be the low-level possession crimes, and then some, it allows for some property crimes that are motivated by the desire to obtain narcotics to also be involved in these programs. And it sets up a process where a local alcoholism planning committee, which is a presently formulated committee for the Office of State Drug and Alcohol Programs, they devise a treatment program right now in every county for drug and alcohol treatment facilities. What this will do is seizing agencies now will, under forfeiture, have some funds, under criminal forfeiture, 40% of the proceeds after costs will be designated for drug treatment programs. And so this says that these local planning groups will coordinate with local seizing agencies who will have these funds for treatment, district attorney and the local public safety coordinating councils, so that they will amend their treatment plans in that locale to take into account, here are some new resources for treatment. And the seizing agencies and the coordinating council will be able to say, these are the type of people who we are focusing on and we believe in our community from a criminal justice perspective should have access to these funds for treatment. And so they'll both work together, a treatment resource, the law enforcement community with funds for treatment to have a coordinated plan. That's That, in a nutshell, is the idea here. And then those treatment resources from criminal forfeiture would be available through the local plan administered by the state for treatment for those offenders. So I hope that's clear, but that is, in a nutshell, what this amendment does. Brings forward a planning process for use of these criminal forfeiture dollars. The local agencies will be involved. That was very important to them, the local law enforcement agencies, to have some participation in that, and coordination and standards. So that's what the Dash 7 amendments are designed to do. Senator Deckard's office worked on these. Law enforcement was involved in them, and we have agreed to them. And I believe the defense bar was involved, and I'm not aware of any opposition to the A7 amendments.
And my understanding also, Mr. Penn, is that the governor's office has been involved in these amendments as well as part of the whole discussion about both civil and criminal forfeiture bills that they're going to be reviewing.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Senator Deckard, why don't you join Mr. Penn in the chair? Mr. Penn took the laboring oar and dutifully explained the Dash A7 amendments to Senate Bill 914. Do you want to add anything?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ryan Deckard, 8375 Southwest Monica Court, Portland. The only thing that I would add, I think Mr. Penn probably did an adequate job of explaining the amendments. The rationale behind this bill, and this bill has probably been worked more than certainly any bill that I have ever been a part of, and I thank many members of the work group that are probably in this room. The idea behind it is that in the early 1990s, or at least the momentum behind it, in the early 1990s, Oregon's correction budget doubled. For the first time in our state's history, we spend more incarcerating Oregonians than we do on higher education, and are the only state in the West that I think makes an unfortunate claim. And so this bill, in its genesis, was how do we get at treating and who's part of this criminal justice population that we might be able to deal with better. The idea behind this was to offer and to look at the counties that are really doing an incredibly great job at this, is offering treatment rather than incarceration for many of these folks. I would just put a couple statistics on the record. The National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse at Columbia University just released a 3-year study on state budgets. States today spend $81.3 billion on substance abuse and addiction. Of every dollar that we spend, 96 is spent on corrections and jails, and only 4 cents is spent on prevention and treatment. And according to our Office of Alcohol and Drug Abuse, for every dollar that we spend on treatment, Oregon saves 5 in other associated costs. And so I think there's a growing trend around the country, certainly in the West, to look at the distribution of funds and where we put our precious resources. I would just also cite a RAND study in 1997 that demonstrated spending $1 million on the expansion of mandatory sentences would reduce drug consumption by 13 kilograms. Spending that same $1 million on treatment would reduce drug consumption nationally by 100 kilograms, and that's cited in the Sentencing Project May 2001 RAND study. And so this bill is an effort to get at that and to provide 40% of the forfeiture funds to help counties develop treatment models like Multnomah and like Lane are doing. I think with that I would thank the committee for hearing this bill and thank all those who are involved in developing it.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Penn or Senator Deckard? Okay, hearing none. Thank you both. Representative Shatterly, do you want to vote on this or do you care? All right. Unless there's anybody else who wants to speak to the bill. Is there anyone else here? Show of hands. Hearing none. Close the public hearing. Open a work session on Senate Bill 914. Representative Lowe.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the Senate Bill 914, A7 amendments.
Representative Lowe moves the Dash A7 amendments to Senate Bill 914. Is there any discussion? Representative Vicki Walker.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say that I really appreciate this bill. I've been reviewing it, and the work that's been done on it's incredible, and I think it's a great asset to our treatment system, and appreciate Senator Deckert for bringing it over here.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Representative Krieger.
Chair, I have a little concern with it, and I have a letter from the past coordinator of the Oregon Internet Agency Narcotics Team, who I worked with for about 6 years with the state police. I'm not going to read it, and I will not be supporting the bill.
Does that letter relate to the Dash A7 amendment or to the original version of the bill?
I believe the original version. I think some of the things he is concerned about, I looked at the bill last night for about an hour. I also have those concerns, but haven't had time to go through the A7.
Okay. My suspicion is, Representative Krieger, that if you review the A7 amendments, you're going to find that their concerns with the original version of the bill have probably been satisfied, but you can certainly vote no and make that determination in advance of the floor vote.
I will do that now, and if I feel they have been addressed when it comes to the floor, we'll look at it.
Fair enough. Anybody else? Okay. With that, call the roll, if you wish, Shannon.
Well, no, wait, we haven't.
Oh, that's right. We haven't adopted. So are you going to oppose the adoption of the A7 amendments?
No.
Okay.
No.
Any objection to the A7s? They're in. Okay. Representative Lowe?
Mr. Chair, I move that we send 914 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Lowe moves Senate Bill 914 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on that motion?
I think that this is a high time we did this, and I am excited to have been called back into committee to do this.
Okay. Anybody else? All right, Shannon.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Backlund?
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder?
Aye.
Representative
Hinkle? Aye.
Representative
Sherwood?
Aye. Representative
Cheryl
Walker?
Aye.
Representative
Dingfelder?
Aye. I'm sorry.
Excuse.
Vice Chair
Krieger? Aye.
Vice
Chair Wall?
Aye.
Chair Wood?
Aye. Senate Bill 914 is amended and moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Do you want to carry Representative Blum?
I think that might have
been. Mr. Chair?
Yes,
can I make a comment, please?
Representative Backlund, you may.
My comment is that Senator Deckert is pretty tough because he said that the district attorney's presentation was adequate. I thought it was better than adequate, but that's beside the point. I just want to say that Senator Deckert must be a pretty tough grader. So.
Well, especially considering that he wasn't in the room when the district attorney made the presentation. to call it adequate was...
Yes, I thought that was... Right. I noted that. Adequate, well.
Wow. Yeah. We may not have entered grade school when the district attorney was in law school.
Okay. We are going to now move into a work session on... Well, this is 384, so what I have to do is, colleagues, I need a suspension of the rules to reconsider the vote for the second time, by which the committee had moved Senate Bill 384 to the floor. Do I have any objection to suspension of the rules? Hearing none, the rules are suspended. The chair would move that we reconsider the vote by which we pass Senate Bill 384 to the floor. For the consideration of further amendments. Is there any objection on that motion? Hearing none, Senate Bill 384 is now back in front of us, Council.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 384 comes to you at the request of Governor Kitsoff of the State Commission on Children and Families. It has a nice relating clause and relating to juveniles. Now, we brought the bill back for purposes of, you may remember back on June 6th, we added a provision that Senator Brown asked us as it relates to minors in possession of alcohol. What also happened, prior to that, we passed out House Bill 2560, also involving minors. The difference between the due bill and possession of alcohol, because of the relating clause, Senator Brown's bill could only apply to minors under the age of 18, because the relating clause is relating to juveniles. The other bill, House Bill 2560, applies to minors under the age of 21. There are some other differences to the bill. 2560 is easier for the Department of Motor Vehicles to
administer and operate. It's less expensive to do so. Also, there's another bill provision in 2560 that, which basically says that if you suspend the license and the person fails to show up in court, then you do not seek a Class A misdemeanor for failure to appear. That has substantial fiscal impact and reduction of workload for the courts. We could not resolve the conflict by a conflict amendment because it was just two different policy ways of going at the same issue. I sat down yesterday in my office with people from the court administrator's office and with people from George from Senator Brown's office, and what we did is we went through the two bills, and then basically I can tell you that Senator, we left one part, one small part of Senator Brown's amendment in the bill at her staff's agreement and understanding. They came to the conclusion that 2560 was probably a better way to approach this issue because it applied both to juveniles under the age of 18 and those who are minors between the ages of 18 and 21. You have the dash 14 amendments in front of you. Now, when we put this bill on, it has a nice relating clause relating to juveniles. Since we decided to put it on, we've attracted two, maybe three more amendments because we got one this morning. All right, now let me go first through the issue as it relates to Senator Brown's bill, the amendment that was added. Going to page 8.
Which one? Which amendment?
This would be the dash A14, excuse me.
Thank you.
That would be section 14. If a youth is cited a summons for a violation of ORS 471, 430, 475, 992, that's one is possession of alcohol, the other is a controlled substance, marijuana under analysis, and fails to appear, the court may adjudicate the citation of petition entered disposition without a hearing. Normally you don't do this in a criminal matter, but this is a violation, you can do that. So you can try someone in absentia. Now, the whole system is designed really to encourage the kid to come in because what teenager, one thing every teenager wants, and that's their license. And that's what it's all tied around. If he failed to appear and they adjudicate and they, when they do come in, and there's a feeling that eventually they will come in, then the court can, if they so choose, if the juvenile can give a, well, a minor can give an adequate reason for why they didn't show, that the court at its discretion can then conduct a hearing on the matter. But what this is all designed is to get the juvenile, the minor, into court and to encourage them to get into some kind of alcohol awareness program. That is the one provision that came over from Senator Brown's bill. Now, also in front of you, you may remember we passed out some time ago Senate Bill 3920. I believe
House Bill 3920.
House Bill 3920. The staff measure summary is in your packet. This passed out of here in 516, removes the requirement the attorney return copies of reports and other materials. Now, Nancy Miller is here on this one. And other materials relating to a youth offender's history and prognosis at the conclusion of the attorney's involvement in the case clarifies that the personal information concerning the victim's abuse and neglect is confidential and not subject to disclosure. I understand this bill is in Rules Committee. You also may remember another bill that we passed out of here some time ago to the House, and then we passed an amendment to another bill, this bill in particular, relating to the Troxell case. And, well, it's tied up in some interesting issues over in the Senate side, and the original sponsors of 3920 are looking for a safe haven for their, their basically housekeeping bill. So when you go to the dash 14 amendments, sections 11, 12, and 12 are 3920 added to this. What you then have behind that is still the original bill. Now, there's an amendment to the original bill, too, which came in late last night. The original bill being shifts responsibility for developing guidelines governing operation of juvenile detention facilities from the State Commission on Children and Families of Juvenile Crime Prevention Advisory Committee. But first, the other part of the bill that we did add to 384 is an attorney is not required to make a report under the section by reason of information communicated to the attorney in the course of representing the client if disclosure information would be detrimental to the client. This is a secrets issue we heard about from Tim Travis. So that is still in the amendments. Now, as it goes to the original bill, we have in your packet another set of amendments, if I could find it, the dash 13. What they basically do, I believe they are from Representative Carlson or maybe Representative Cruz. And what they do, they take out the Juvenile Crime Prevention Advisory Committee and put in the Oregon Youth Authority. So where the law currently reads, for example, on the original bill on page 1, line 12, the State Commission of Children and Families and the Department of Corrections shall develop guidelines pertaining to the operation of juvenile detention facilities. The bill as proposed when it came in here would say the State Juvenile Crime Prevention Advisory Committee. With the amendment, it would say the Oregon Youth Authority and the Department of Corrections shall develop guidelines. Now, if that were not enough, we have...
There's the A-15
amendments, which relates to Deschutes County's pilot project, and I haven't had a chance to read it, and I know Ernie Mazzaro is in the audience. I think this is the part where they've got two programs up there, and I think this may be the one. Ernie's going to need to help me on this, where they get money rather than sending in certain... Each county gets a quota of sending juveniles to the Oregon Youth Authority. These aren't Measure 11 kids. These are kids that are delinquent. And they have a project that whereby they will send them to the, rather than send them to the Youth Authority, they will take care of them at their county facilities and they get the money for doing that. Ernie, am I right about that? Is that what this... And then the Dash 16 amendments, I believe, pertains to an audit by the Secretary of State of the Deschutes County Delinquent Youth Demonstration Project.
For the record, my name is Ernie Mazarol. I'm the court administrator of Deschutes County. Mr. Taylor, I'm sorry. I did not hear what you were saying. I was in the back of the room talking to someone
else.
Okay.
Mr. Mazarol, this
court... Are you prepared to talk about the Dash 815s, Ernie?
I just saw them earlier this morning. I am prepared to say a few words about them.
Why don't you do that for us?
The amendments give us two more years on our demonstration project, which gives us more time to track kids for a longer period of time and get more kids into the system. I believe that it would benefit both the state and the county. It would give us better data to base some policy decisions. And it would also give the county an opportunity to, I guess, you know, if necessary, downsize the project or eliminate it if that's what's going to happen, but at the same time, give us a chance to, I guess, deal with policy issues in a more rational environment than what currently exists. We're finding out that we're doing a real good job networking in our own community with our business, government, and community members, but we need to do a better job outside of our community with the state officials and other interested parties. And we're committed to doing that. We've agreed to expand the membership on our evaluation committee so there can be a more broader look at the program and to report more regularly to OYA and their advisory board and to also allow for the financial audit with the Secretary of State. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions anybody may have.
Colleagues, the Dash A-16s that just got handed out are the ones which would require that the Secretary of State's Division of Audits shall audit the demonstration project. So that's what the Dash A-16s do. The 15s, as I understand it, are the actual extension of the sunset of the demonstration project from 2003 to 2005. Council.
Mr. Mazzaro, is this demonstration project, is this where you keep the youth that you would otherwise send to the Oregon Youth Authority in the community and you work with them there? Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, the demonstration project is the old House Bill 3737.
Okay.
To where the youth stay in the Deschutes County facility and are treated there in lieu of being sent to the Oregon Youth Authority. There are some kids, though, that are in the Oregon Youth Authority. We still do access some of those beds. We reduced our population from the Oregon Youth Authority to roughly about 23 beds to 6 beds. That's how many state beds that we access annually now.
Thank you.
Are there further questions from Mr. Mazzaro? Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sir, Can you tell me, I know that you don't have an evaluation scheduled for this program until, I think it comes before the sunset or after the sunset. Can you sort of fill me in on that a little bit?
Yeah, the way the law is currently written, I believe the sunset is June 30th of 2003. And the law says that the evaluation has to be conducted before October of 2003. What we're doing now, we've been working with the Oregon Youth Authority and COJAC, who are the other two people involved in this contract, or through the intergovernmental agreement. We're trying to up our evaluation period to get a report from the University of Oregon by October of 2002 in order for it to be prepared before budgets are prepared next session. So we're working pretty hard at trying to get that done. The problem with that, though, is when you start trying to reduce the time period on the evaluation, then you have fewer kids that are in that program for a shorter period of time. So our hope is that we can get that evaluation, at least a preliminary report done by October of next year. We're working to get on JAGES, which we should be up by August of this year. And then when the report comes in October of next year by the University of Oregon, we want to keep it updated, working with Oregon Youth Authority through the JAGES system. But hopefully we won't have to continue funding that evaluation project beyond that period.
If I can just follow up.
Follow up.
Thank you. So at this point, the program, we're hoping it's successful, but you don't have that evaluation done, and so you need this extension of time to really fully complete that. Is that true?
That's correct.
I don't like getting programs started and we don't give them an opportunity to work, so I appreciate that you're coming forward with this amendment.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shetterly.
Well, I'd just be curious to know where OYA is on the 13s, 14s, 15s, and 16s, whichever ones.
Ms.
14, 15 and 16 anyway, and 13s too, for that matter.
Ms. Brazeau, do you want to come forward? All right, let me say it this way. Would you come forward?
That's the first time this year for that.
Shall we issue a subpoena?
Lawyers, you could subpoena them.
We could, actually. The committee does have that power, although we've never had to do it, at least in this committee, which I'm grateful for. Karen, it would be helpful for us just to get your input, and I'm not going to make you give a long, drawn-out discussion, but the 13s are something that you and I have talked briefly about the 15s and the 16s yesterday. The 13s are something that I just saw yesterday briefly. Do you have an objection to the 13s?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I would actually prefer to talk about the 13s with the other participants of the bill, the Commission on Children and Families and the Criminal Justice Commission. I do have a problem with the 13s. First, maybe I should say Karen Brazeau, Director of the Oregon Youth Authority. If you want me to talk about the 13s singly without my cohorts here, I will.
Well, let me just ask this. Is there anybody in the room who supports the 13s? If you support the 13s, raise your hand. All right. Seeing none, I think that sort of solves the problem on the 13s. Let's move then on to the 14s, or the 15s and the 16s. How about?
15s and the 16s.
She wouldn't say hint.
It was well, no, I just, let me
she
just ask
like
this way.
Empty space between.
do you have an objection to the 15s and the 16s as they're drafted?
I have no objection to the 15s and the 16s if they remain together.
Yeah. The 15s are fine so long as the 16 get it, the 16s get adopted.
Yes.
All right. Does that satisfy your complicated curiosity? Colleagues, this isn't a simple issue. I mean, I think people do have differences of opinion with respect to this issue, but I think that one of the concerns is the ability to demonstrate that the program is functioning in Deschutes County as a demonstration project the way it was intended, and I think the Secretary of State's audit, and also the extension which will allow them to have their evaluation completed, as Representative Vicky Walker pointed out, combined perhaps maybe gets us there. Karen.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I would like for the committee to know and to go on record, since I've maybe been a little bit flippant here, that we have had a very rocky relationship with Deschutes County over the project. I think in large part it's because the project works for Deschutes County. They like it. It works for their community. My opinion as a representative of the state is that the state has a different interest in the project around replicability, since other counties are interested, and that I believe Deschutes is understanding the state's interest better and the need to have some data that better addresses the state's interest. And I can tell you that in the last month, we have had a very different relationship with Deschutes County and are working much better together, and I'm very hopeful that that will improve. And I think Ernie would say the same thing. So I do apologize for my little bit of a flippant attitude. But it's late in the session.
Mr. Chair, for the record, again, Ernie Mazerall, we do feel good about our relationship with the Oregon Youth Authority, and we will continue to maintain very open dialogue with them. We have said that we support the Secretary of State financial audit. We will make our records open and available to the Secretary of State when they come in.
Well, that's good. Now we get to end on a warm and fuzzy note.
Good.
Does anybody want to come and speak to any of the other amendments? Let's take the 14s first.
Anybody here to speak on the 14s?
Oh, excuse me.
No, I'm going to leave, but I just want to.
All right.
Okay, why don't you come up, Nancy?
Thanks. Have a good time. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Good morning. For the record, Nancy Miller, Director of the Juvenile Court Programs Division of the State Court Administrator's Office. I think Mr. Taylor did a really good job going through what the 14s are about. The 14s are predominantly our amendments. We support them, and I would be happy to answer any questions if you need a lengthier explanation, but he kind of went through them. Any questions of Ms. Miller?
Not on the 14s, Nancy. Anything on the 13s?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shetterly, we don't have a position on the 13th. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Miller. Okay, let's, anybody else want to address the 14s? How about the 15s? Anybody else want to address the 15s? Mr. Dole? Okay, and we've had some documents passed out by Crime Victims United, and who would like to go first?
Ms. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Dolan, President of Crime Victims United, and we are opposed to the Dash 15 amendments. I have with me here today the founders of Crime Victims United, Bob and Dee Dee Coons, who would like to make some comments about this request for an extension for a project that's been ongoing for now 4 years and has another 2 years before it's actually up. And then I'd like to make a few concluding comments regarding the documents that you have in front of you.
Okay, please go forward.
I'm Dee Dee Coons, longtime advocate for crime victims. 20 years ago, our daughter was a murder victim, and that started our involvement in the criminal justice system. We founded CVU in 1983, along with other parents of murdered children. Over these last 20 years, I've studied absolutely thousands of stats, both national, state, counties, cities, went 4.5 years to the Lifers Club and talked to people who have done murder. We went to McLaren and talked to hundreds of kids who were intake kids who had been in the system. All of them had either had a very long criminal record or they had done a very serious crime, and that's why they were at McLaren. We learned a lot from those kids, probably more than any other place that we worked. We went to the Criminal Justice Council. We were there for every meeting, I think, except one, with the 5 years of formulating the sentencing guidelines. And we know hundreds of people who've worked in the system and discussed the system with them. We know thousands of victims. We went to court cases and parole hearings with many of them. I'm not telling you to toot my horn or to be a martyr. I'm telling you because this is our credentials in being here. We are the very few who truly understand the system, I believe, from all its aspects. The only way to find the truth of all the areas of the system I've found, and I'm sure that we do not know all of them by any means, but is to do this kind of effort. Because the system is not always truthful. Individuals, oftentimes, make excuses, brush away the differences as if they're a difference in opinion. And I full well know the difference between fact and opinion. 2 and 2 is 4. You may think 4 is too great a number, and I may think it's too small, but it is a fact that 2 and 2 are 4. I've heard all the excuses. Multnomah County, back in the early 80s, were saying some of the same ones that I'm hearing now from Deschutes County, that the police arrested more offenders than in other places, and that people reported more crime because they had such a great trust of the system. These are things that I absolutely disdain because they are not based on facts. After all of these long years, we were able to make some accomplishments. One of the important ones was the Reformation Clause, and I'm very proud that we were instrumental in getting this done. It was the legislature that referred it to the people, and the people passed it overwhelmingly.
I'm really sorry to interrupt you, Ms. Coons. I know very well that you have done your homework and have a good sense of the entire system. But we're laboring under some time constraints. I'm afraid.
Okay, I'll wrap it up real quickly.
Get to the conclusion. We do have your printed testimony and a position statement. So could you?
I don't.
I appreciate it.
We also were very involved in Senate Bill 1. Spent a great deal of time, as well as many other people in the state. What I'd like to ask is why? What's the rush when Deschutes County has 2 years left of funding? Why are they not on JGIS after all this time? Why has there been no audit? Why wouldn't you want an audit before extending the project? If it were successful, I would think Deschutes County would be very proud and would very much want to have an audit and show the results of their successful program. University of Oregon is not the law. They are not the audit. The law says the Secretary of State does the audit. And if Deschutes County is having success, we would be the first to support it. We have been talking for years. I know people like Bill Taylor have heard us 1,000 times say that, well, maybe 100, that we feel that not only are we making victims, but we're making victims out of offenders by not holding them responsible. And they get into a life of crime and continue it when they've been into it too long.
Thank you, Ms. Coons. I'm not trying to limit your testimony, but I do think that we've had the depth and breadth of it, and I fear that I'm going to lose a quorum by 9 o'clock, and I'd like to bring this to conclusion if I could, please.
Good.
Mr. Bill.
Well, first of all, I want to start out by saying this. In the OIA budget this year, we had some lengthy testimony in front of the subcommittee, the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Public Safety. And in the middle of that, this material that's presented to you this morning, these first two sheets, the Deschutes County comparisons and the critical review of the report to the E-Board were presented to the subcommittee. Those reports, which we brought forward, generated this letter from the Deschutes County Board of Commissioners, which you don't have in front of you, with a lot of information in it. This is a letter I wrote back to them, which you have in front of you. Quite frankly, their evaluation and the material they sent to me raised more questions than it did answers. I also want to add to you that Senator Miller, who I had a long discussion with this morning, asked me to deliver this message to you. And that is this, is that he has also written a letter to Denny Maloney that included 16 questions. And of those 16 questions, before you vote to extend this thing, of those 16 questions, he had to return 13 of those to Mr. Maloney because the questions were incomplete, not forthcoming, and quite frankly, one of them was, I know in this day and age we're supposed to say intellectually disingenuous, but where I was raised we call it a bold-faced lie. So the reality is we wouldn't be sitting here today talking about extending these programs had not the light been turned on in Deschutes County and somebody questioned what's been going on there for the last 4 years. We've had no fiscal audit. We've had no performance audit. It's not just about CYIP. It's about their entire juvenile program over there. I think what you should understand is that you have to look at the juvenile code that was changed by this body in 1995 when we passed Senate Bill 1. And then you have to look at Deschutes County website, and I'm going to read right out of it. It says, there's an understandable concern among some as to the appropriateness of treating offenders as customers. We must remember, however, that most states still have a juvenile code preamble that states it is the purpose of this court to carry out due process duties and responsibilities that are in the best interest of the child. Ms. Chair, members of the committee, we threw that language out in 1995. That hasn't been the language. That hasn't been the law in the state of Oregon. And it appears to me that Deschutes County has an absolute disregard for the laws that have been set out in the state of Oregon on how we handle juveniles. So I would encourage this. I certainly encourage the amendments in 16. That authorize an audit, and that audit should not be limited to the YIP project. It should be the entire juvenile department in Deschutes County, as the code calls for in 419C, for a complete audit of every juvenile department in the state. But it also should include, because we're sending state monies down there to the tune of about $800,000 per biennium, it should include a fiscal audit to find out what exactly is happening with those monies. I can tell you this, that $800,000 would certainly be welcome in the OIA right now under very tight budget constraints, and would probably get us halfway to the beds we need over there, which are being cut. So I have to tell you, I have a very strong opposition to extending this program. I mean, how many years do you need to demonstrate that something works? Let's get the audit done, and let's take care of this question in the next legislature when this thing sunsets and decide whether we want to give them any more time on this. I thank you for your time.
I appreciate that very much. Did you wish to speak to the Dash 16 amendments as well, specifically anything else?
Well, I would only say this, and I want to get back to one thing that Senator Miller said real quickly, that we wouldn't be here this morning talking about this had not the light been turned on. They wouldn't be asking for this extension had not all these letters, had not they been exposed in effect. As far as the Dash 16 amendments go, I really think that we should make it clear in there that the audit must absolutely include a performance audit of the entire juvenile program by the Secretary of State as per 419C.001 of the code.
Well, I kind of agree with you on that one, and I do kind of think that the audit ought to include a perspective about what the outcome has been for the children that have been involved in that, and I'm glad that we're laying that out in the record here. Was there anything else?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you so much. My name is Bob Coons, the lesser half of Bob and Dee Coons. I would just like to point out one thing that I will shorten us up so that you can get on.
We're going to lose our quorum.
419C, the very first sentence says, the Legislative Assembly declares that in delinquency cases, the purposes of the Oregon juvenile justice system from apprehension forward are to protect the public and reduce juvenile delinquency. That is the purpose of the Oregon juvenile justice system. You folks adopted that in 1995. That replaces in the best interest of the child, which was the purpose prior to 1995. The second part of 419C was programs, policies, and services shall be regularly and independently audited as to the effectiveness in providing public safety and in preventing a youth return to criminal behavior. The Secretary of State shall select and oversee the auditors. Now, I don't know how anything could be any more simple and any clearer than what this law says. I believe it is crystal clear what the law says. And I know what those of us who worked so hard in writing it, and by the way, Madam Chair, this was the writing of 419C was a two-year project under the aegis of then Attorney General
Kulongowski
and Senate President Smith. And it was given the Senate Bill 1 designation because it was their first priority. I am here to beg you not to take the sunset off of this. That is bad government, folks. This may be the greatest thing since Rice Krispies. I'm not here to tell you it's not. But I'm telling you that unless it works in terms of what the law says it is supposed to do, then we ought not to refund it. I just read in about two or three weeks ago where the federal government has finally got it, that we have a myriad alcohol and drug programs out there, and we haven't got the foggiest notion of how successful they are. And so now they're going to spend some bucks in evaluating these programs, which seems eminently sensible to me as just an ordinary citizen out here, as to what is it we're spending our money for. And so I conclude my remarks with that, Madam Chair. I hope that good government prevails here, that we do the thing that we are supposed to do, and that we are rigorous and we put on our green eye shades when we take a look at new and quite radical programs.
Madam Chair, if I could, one more brief comment. I also want to, it's indicated in my letter, but I want to say this, and that I have been contacted by people inside of Deschutes County, and I will tell you this, for obvious reasons, they have to stay anonymous. I think you can all understand that. And I will tell you that their numbers are more than 5 and less than 10. And what they tell me, and these are criminal justice professionals, is that the picture that the management is painting of that program and the reality of what's going on inside are as different as night and day.
I would like to say one final sentence that I didn't get to say. We hope that all offenders are rehabilitated. But right now, the only way we know if they are or not when we turn them loose is if we sacrifice some of our public members. They lose their property, their bodies, and their lives sometimes. And we need to know if something is working or if it's not. Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on this? Mr. Representative.
I'd like to make a comment to the three witnesses. As a first-time legislator, I sit on a Ways and Means Subcommittee, and we scrutinize a lot of agency budgets, from ODOT to economic development. It goes on and on. And one of the most difficult things to do is to understand really what's going on in the agency, because they come and they give you a certain presentation. And I think that's one of the problems with term limits in general, where we're new here and we try to understand what is really going on, is money being spent as effectively as possible. This is an extremely emotional issue for you, given the nature of the subject. But from my perspective, it's a question of efficiency in government, which I've been wrestling with ever since I arrived here. So I appreciate your testimony, but from my perspective, as far as what's the most efficient way to accomplish government, it's a very difficult thing to get our hands around. So I appreciate your testimony.
Okay, I'm going to take a little poll here. I'm trying to decide whether or not it would be better to wait until we have a full quorum, a full component here. Anybody else want discussion? Yeah, A14. Take testimony on the A14. Do we have any motions on the A14?
Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Move the A14s. I think those were agreeable to everybody. Move the A14s to Senate Bill 384.
Okay. Representative, you know what? I forgot to open the work session.
No, we're in work session. Were we already?
Okay, good. Okay, we're in work session, and Representative Sheridan has moved adoption of the A14s into this bill. Any discussion? Hearing none. Is there any objection? Hearing none. A14s are adopted into Senate Bill 384.
Madam Chair?
Representative Shetterly.
Well, I'm just going to make a comment. I'm troubled by the testimony, and I've heard questions and concerns about the Deschutes County program in the past. I wish we had brought this up maybe the first week in the session so that we could have some time to get some fully fleshed out testimony from both sides on this thing. It's tough to do to come in the middle of June in a hearing where we're constrained in the time that we have, and to get such a diametrically opposed views of this program and then be asked to make a choice. I wish I'd like to say let's schedule this out for two or three more hearings, but I don't know that we have the time to do that. It seems to me, and I'll just make the suggestion to you, that we decide to move this one way or another just to get this back at least to the Senate. This bill has been sitting in committee for a long time, and then have OIA and the other folks work with Senator Minnis to concur or not concur based on whatever we do today, and maybe try and work out the final details in a conference committee. I think we do need to get this bill moving. It's been here for a long, long time. But again, I hate whatever decision we make today. I'm not inclined to think of it as the final decision, but more of a decision just to get the bill going and keep dealing with this so we can get the issues specifically dealing with the Deschutes County project resolved in conference committee, perhaps, if that's what we're going to do.
Well, that makes sense, too, Representative Ringo.
I find this process very frustrating because there's a lot of history here that I'm not familiar with.
Right.
I don't know the details of the complaints with the Deschutes program there's been a lot of negotiations between OIA and Deschutes County. We don't know the details of that. And I suppose if everybody signed off on it, then that would be one thing. I guess I would need to know the details if everybody was agreed to it. But since there is some significant question raised, it's hard for me just to say, okay, fine, go along with it, and then consider things worked out in the budget.
Chair.
Representative.
Feel very similar to Representative Ringo. I'm not prepared to move this bill in my own mind until we have had more time to look at the testimony as fresh, look at the amendments. I cannot move bills that I have not had time to inform myself of. With these new amendments, we shouldn't be doing that.
Okay, I can respect that too. I think that Representative Ackerman.
Yeah, just I share the committee's frustration with this last-minute testimony regarding the vitality of this program. But let me just ask a general question on the basis of my inexperience. Would this be a subject which would be appropriate for our work during the interim as a joint Judiciary Committee? I'm seeing some nods of heads because I hate to drop this thing now and not revisit it until 2 years, okay, if there is a problem.
Part of Representative Dingfelter.
I do share some of the concerns that's been expressed here. For me, not knowing the background of why Deschutes County even took on this program and not going through OIA.
There's some history.
Yes, but I would, is there any way we can possibly pass a dash A16 so that at least moves forward with an audit? The program is in place and not, if my understanding is not currently being audited, that was not clear to me in the testimony.
It is my understanding that the A14s, 15s, and 16s kind of work together as a compromise agreement that people have, they kind of need to stay together or not. There's huge disagreement in the room. Nancy, did you want to come forward and... No? Okay. Well, it would be my preference at this point in time to recess and let this perk a few minutes, okay, or at least a couple of days while we think about it. We can reconvene and let me see what... Yeah. I noticed that I'm not the only one queasy about this. And so I think we'd better simply recess and let this... develop a little bit more.
We have adopted the A14, so
yeah,
we need to make a motion on that.
Do we need to rescind the A14s?
No, the A14s are okay.
Okay, A14s are right. Okay. Well, at this point in time, I'll thank you for your testimony. I will add to this, been involved with juvenile courts for quite some time to various connections and also professionally, and I am aware that there are some problems with the Deschutes system. It does need a good audit. I am grateful for the testimony that you brought forward, but I'm also encouraged by the fact that Deschutes and the OIA and the state have been coming to some consensus about this. For me, that is very hopeful and very productive, and I want to thank them for that hard work that they did.
Madam Chair, you need to say recess or adjourn?
Recess.
Yes. Until how?
Recess, we need a time certain, let's say 1 o'clock. I don't know what...
It's a couple of days. Is that your time, 1 o'clock today?
Yeah.
It's sometime today.
Yeah, it must be recess till 1 o'clock today. What's possible?
Well, the committee can always decide if it can't come to an agreeable time later, but we would come back sometime next week as we schedule it. But
okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to recess until 1 o'clock on this. If we need to change, for the record, we must have a time certain for the recess. If we need to change it, we can change it because we're under the one-hour rule. But the other thing that we need to do is I need a motion to adjourn for a time certain, and I'd like the adjournment motion to be 5 o'clock today.
Just recess. I'm not sure about
that. So we could come in and just bang the gavel and
we
adjourn without a quorum.
We never came back.
Yeah.
We can adjourn without a quorum?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
sure we've done it differently in other committees. Okay, and with that, we're going to recess.